After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Metta Hour with Sharon Salzberg, where Buddhist wisdom meets everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Be Here Now Network and features interviews with the top leaders, teachers, and thinkers of the mindfulness movement and beyond. For more information, visit beherenownetwork.com/Sharon.
Hi, I'm Sharon Salzberg, and I'm in conversation today with my good friend, Tami Simon. You may not be familiar with Tami's work, but she's the founder of the multimedia publishing company Sounds True. Over its 36-year history, Sounds True has produced over 3,000 titles and been included twice for the Inc. 500 list of the fastest-growing companies. Tami also hosts the popular Sounds True podcast, Insights at the Edge, which has now been downloaded more than 15 million times. Tami has been instrumental in the creation of the Inner MBA program, which is now open for registration. Sounds True is partnered with LinkedIn and Wisdom 2.0 for this 9-month interactive program featuring esteemed CEOs and conscious business and mindfulness leaders, including me. The program is certified through New York University's Mindful NYU. Welcome to the podcast, Tami.
Thank you, Sharon. It's great to be with you, always.
It's always great to be with you. I think of so many of the times we've shared, including, as I just said to you, as we were checking sounds, I remember sitting in your car in Boulder. I had gone to record, I think, the audio version of Faith, and you held up a CD and you said, "See this? This is going to be obsolete." And I thought, what is she talking about? Like, and I've always seen you, honestly, as a tremendous visionary and somebody who, you're kind of like a seer in my mind, somebody who senses the next iteration, the next flow for this community. And so 36 years is quite a long time.
It is a long time. And interestingly, I feel as committed, as interested, as passionate about Sounds True and what we're up to in the world as I ever have. So that's interesting. I don't see any end in sight. It's a long arc for me. And I think that's because, and you know, you and I, Sharon, have talked about the Dharma in so many different ways over the years. But it's once your life, in my experience at least, becomes devoted to that, it's endless. It's endlessly fulfilling.
And I think about, well, the Insight Meditation Society just had its 45th anniversary. So I get what a 36-year span is. Mm-hmm. And I know that I've seen a lot of changes in your company, just as you started out as an audio company, right? And then it's just grown and expanded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the story about, you know, CDs going away and starting as an audio cassette company. And, you know, in some ways, it's changed a whole heck of a lot in terms of the format. And we've expanded into all of these different formats. But in another sense, the original vision, disseminate spiritual wisdom, is still right at the core of everything that we do. It's that we found different media. By whatever media necessary, mm-hmm. like to, in order to express that. And, you know, one of the interesting things for me has been to see how you can disseminate spiritual wisdom in 60 seconds or in a 9-month training program. And I think in the beginning, I had this heavy bent towards long form learning. And I was like, you know, you need hours and hours and hours. And then I started saying, no, it's the same principles, which is give real quality, embed it in every word, embed it in the intention of what you're doing. And it's possible to deliver that medicine in so many different kinds of capsules or formats. It's endless how to do it, and it keeps evolving.
That's so fantastic. So I wonder if we could start with the story of how you first got interested in the path of practice, and also what your practice looks like these days in the midst of COVID and this very different version of life that we're living.
Sure. Well, I'll take the first part of the question first, which is, there I was, a young person going off to Swarthmore College, thinking I would be a philosophy major. And I don't think I really understood at the time as a, you know, 18-year-old what it meant to be a philosophy major. I just wanted to study the meaning of life and what mattered the most. But I soon discovered that I was better suited for the religious studies department. And I think that's because what was really alive and of interest to me was personal revelation, personal experience, personal knowing. So there I was studying mysticism and studying the teachings of the mystics. And in my sophomore year in the religious studies department, I had the great good fortune of studying with someone from Sri Lanka who was there teaching on a Fulbright scholarship, Gunapala Dharmasiri. And Gunapala Dharmasiri had spent his first 16 years as a Buddhist monk, and he was at Swarthmore teaching on Buddhism and existentialism and Buddhist ethics. And Gune, as he was called, his nickname, he and I became fast friends after the first or second class. And I would actually go to his house in the evenings, maybe 2 or 3 times a week. And with his wife and his 3 kids, we would sit down and we would have these full-on Sri Lankan curry dinners that I loved. And then afterwards, I would do the dishes with his wife and play with his kids. And this became more interesting to me and the conversations I was having with Gune than all of my other coursework combined. Mm-hmm. And at the end of my sophomore year, I was determined to travel with him back to Sri Lanka and to take a year off and to see what would come from that. And when I was in Sri Lanka, I had more great good fortune in that Goenka was teaching one of his 10-day meditation boot camp training programs right there in Kandy, which was next to where Gune lived. And I took one of those first 10-day trainings. When I came back, Gune looked at me and he said, "Your eyes look different. They're like turned on in a way that I've never seen before." And that was really when I fell in love with meditation. And I ended up traveling up to Igatpuri in India and doing 2 more of these 10-day intensives, and then traveling up to Kathmandu and doing another 10-day intensive. So I had done 4 10-day intensives over the course of a few months. And in that, it was a tremendous homecoming for me, that discovery of meditation. And I think it gave me something that I thought I would originally find in the philosophy department and then the religious studies department. And I couldn't find it reading books, but I did find it sitting on the cushion, which was a sense of homecoming, belonging, acceptance, relaxation, knowing, being okay as a human being. Let's just say it the way I finally felt okay. And it was kind of the first time, to be honest, that I felt okay. That there wasn't some part of me that was like, can I please get beamed up to my home planet now and get out of here? Mm-hmm. It was like, no, I don't need to go back to my home planet, whatever that is. I can actually sit here and be with myself. So it was a huge revelation for me. And really, Sounds True and the birth of Sounds True came out of those initial days of meditation and a devotion that came forward in me to bring the practice of meditation and similar contemplative practices in whatever form to as many people as possible. I dedicated my life to that while I was in India. So that's the first part of the answer to your question about what brought me to the path. In terms of this past pandemic period, one of the things I've noted is that as someone who's quite introverted, the pandemic has actually allowed me to be more myself. And I didn't even realize that I was kind of, I was kind of faking it to go out to all those business dinners and do all that travel and be that forward with so many people so much of the time. And that my natural rhythms are quieter, actually, where I spend a lot more time alone and a lot more time walking in the woods with, I have two young dogs who like 1 to 2 hours of exercise a day. So I think the pandemic has given me a lot more time with myself, and I'm grateful for that, deeply grateful for that. And I think it's also showed me that as we emerge out of the pandemic, hopefully here, as a vaccinated culture, that I'm going to say no to a lot more things and honor this natural introversion in me.
Yeah, I've heard that. I'm obviously, you know, this has been such a difficult time in so many ways, and really just awful for so many people. And yet for some people, there have been obviously those almost like gifts to be unearthed. You know, people tell me they've discovered their neighbors in New York City, for example, in ways that everyone, as you know, they kind of tend to live very isolated. You know, like somebody said to me, I've lived in this apartment for 12 years. I never even knew my neighbors' names.
Yeah.
And now we all have one another's names and phone numbers and we check in on each other. Or someone told me she moved away from what we would call a kind of glittering kind of life in New York City of lunches and dinners and things like that. And she moved to a house she has in the country. And she said, I'm growing a garden. You know, like that is a very different rhythm of life. And so I'm hoping that certainly in terms of that sense of having found one another and needing to relate to one another and honoring our own rhythms, I'm hoping that that sustains as we go forward. So I was also touched because Goenka was my first teacher. Mm-hmm. And so it was such an incredibly inspiring turning point. It was like there was no looking back in a way from that. And I wanted to ask you, did you have a radio show before you started Sounds True? Is that where it all began?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, it's just interesting to hear about your connection with Goenka as well. And, you know, I think there was something about the 10-day format where you're waking up at 5 a.m. and going to bed at 10 p.m. and you're in noble silence the entire time. It was such an intense pressure cooker that I think it's part of what gave birth to the intense devotion in me was being trained in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. And what happened actually is as I spent more time in India, actually things didn't go so well for me, to be honest. It was hard for me to integrate the intensity of the meditation experience. And for a period of time, I even stopped eating very much to the point that I weighed less than 100 pounds.
I'm sure.
I had developed hepatitis. And when my parents discovered that I didn't call home on my 21st birthday because I was in a clinic, they were like, okay, game over, game over, you know, youthful adventure over, you're coming home. And when I came home at the time, I wasn't talking very much either. So I wasn't talking very much and I wasn't eating very much. And my parents were like, oh my God, what happened to our big mouth daughter? Which was actually a nickname I had when I was growing up. She was big mouth. They're like, something's wrong. What happened? This meditation's, you know, she's off the rails. And I was like, well, I think a lot of talking is just about filling space. And I like space. I'm comfortable in space. I don't have any need to fill space. And, you know, so they were very concerned. And they were like, could you just please finish your academic degree? That's all we ask. And at the time, I didn't quite know if I was going to finish my academic degree, but I came out to Boulder. And in coming out to Boulder, I thought I would go to Naropa and I could study the psychology of meditation, try to figure out what was happening with me, and hopefully have some positive integration experiences. But during that time, I discovered I just didn't want any kind of academic immersion, even an alternative university like Naropa. But I was interested in learning, which is interesting. I did want to keep learning. So the radio show that I hosted was born out of that desire in me to talk to spiritual teachers and interview spiritual teachers and understand from them some of the questions that were emerging in my own life and through my own meditative journeys inside. And so that's when I started this volunteer radio interview show. It was called Live from Planet Earth, where I interviewed the various spiritual teachers who were coming through Boulder. And meanwhile, my parents said, if you're not going to get a degree, we're not going to support you. And I was like, well, that makes sense. You shouldn't support me. So I started waitressing at a restaurant, hosting this radio show. And then my father died. This is a long answer to your question, Sharon, but I'm getting there. And when my father died, I inherited about $50,000. And at the time, one of the people that I was interviewing him on a totally different subject. I was interviewing him about crystals because he had huge crystals in his window. But in his window, he also had a yin-yang symbol with a dollar sign in the middle and the words transformational economy over this yin-yang symbol with a dollar sign. So I said to him, I've inherited this money. What should I do with it? And he said, why don't you put it into yourself? And at the time, the volunteer radio show, I would sell like 3 to 5 copies at the end of the show because people would contact me and say, you know, can I have a copy? Can I buy a copy of your program? And so this was really the birth of Sounds True, was using this money that I inherited to further what was a volunteer radio show and take what was a cottage business and try to grow the whole thing. So yes, the radio interview show was part of the very origin of the company. And of course, who knew, you know, that's far way before podcasting, that 25 years later, I would start a podcast and that would become an important part of Sounds True's growth and outreach.
Well, first I have to say that as a meditation teacher who's, you know, taught a lot of people, I really drew a breath of relief when you said you were waitressing, because I thought, oh, she got grounded, you know, like after kind of floating in that other space.
The waitressing helped, and then believe, you know, starting the Sounds True. It was such an important grounded activity for me. And I liked it so much. And of course, with a young business, you know, if you don't throw yourself into it, it probably won't grow and prosper. So I think working 60, 70 hours a week, that was really grounding too. It really helped me so much those beginning days at, just to take all the energy that I had tapped into and starting to weave it into my body through work.
So great. I mean, I'm really fascinated at kind of media in general. Like I remember reading the accounts of people who heard about Ram Dass on his trip back from India when, you know, he was already Ram Dass. He'd met his guru. He was teaching. And so many people in those accounts would say, I heard him on the radio. Or Raghu Marcus would say, you know, I heard him on the radio, WBAI, and I brought him to my show in Montreal. And then three people would write, well, I heard him on Raghu's show in Montreal. Raghu was Mitchell in those days. You know, I heard him on that show in Montreal and I decided to go to India. And to think about just the role of the medium in being able to disseminate knowledge and accessibility. And in those days it was radio. It was the radical force for the people.
Yeah. You know, even in the very beginning of Sounds True, I thought of each cassette, and we would duplicate the cassettes at the end of a workshop. So if we went to your loving kindness workshop and recorded it, we would duplicate cassettes on type, right there on site as people were leaving. And I thought of each cassette as being this concentrated agent of revolution. Each little cassette held that much power and potential. And I think it's true. It's an incredibly powerful medium, incredibly powerful.
So in 36 years from the beginning of the company, we've seen an entire industry grow around yoga and meditation. And so I'm just thinking about the responses you might have gotten from people when you told them what your company was about originally, which is a little bit like my being introduced as a meditation teacher in 1975 or something, to now, where just the difference is so enormous. And part of it, I think, is the accessibility. You know, that I went to India when I was 18 and I didn't know where else to find meditation instruction. And I was a New Yorker. I was going to school in Buffalo. Never even been to California before, but I was going, which is like the miracle of my life, you know, that I look back and I think, why did I think I could go to India? Like, at 18, but I did. And these days, you know, to have all these practices and teachings so much more accessible means that so many more people might reach for them. You don't have to be in some like vast, intense state of suffering, although many people are. And you don't have to think like, I've got to get to India. It's like, it's right here. And I think that's wonderful.
Indeed. Indeed it is. You know, as things have changed over 36 years, I think one of the anchoring commitments I continue to have is to make sure that the work that Sounds True is doing and what we're putting out is both broad and deep at the same time. And I don't want the depth dimension to ever get lost. And that requires a certain commitment. Because I think a lot of the contemporary purveyors of meditation training and all different kinds and formats, it can just be a kind of surface level offering. And that's fine and that's good. But I really want Sounds True to also make sure that the depth of identity transformation that's possible is available to people and that we take people there. So that's one of my own personal commitments.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And I think the medium lends itself to that because as things have gotten more popular, as these techniques and methods have gotten more popular, they've often gotten more popularized, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for people to be able to access voices where you are really the gatekeeper and you're a wonderful gatekeeper where, you know, someone doesn't, I mean, I'm sure you have to be moved in some way by the presentation or inspired or provoked in a good way by the presentation in order to include somebody. And that's really important because it is kind of like wild out there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I remember talking to your friend and colleague, Joseph Goldstein, at one point, and it was when we published his book on mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And there's so much depth in that book. And I said, you know, how do you feel about all the Mick mindfulness that's going on? Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, Tammy, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't worry me. I just want to make sure that there are at least some people that are anchoring the depth of the tradition and making that available to people. Mm-hmm. And that's my focus. And I thought that was a great answer because, you know, I realized that in myself, I could spend a lot of energy being critical I could just focus on this other thing and that would be a lot more useful. And so his answer really helped me.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I'm thinking you're also willing. Joseph's book is like giant. It's like really a big book.
Yeah. 500-page, they people call them, what, doorstops. But that's what it took for him to be able to unpack the Satipatthana Sutra in the way that he was already teaching it. And it fit. It fit for what he was doing.
Yeah, so, and I really admire that as well, that your publications are varied, and you know, some of them are, I don't want to say challenging, like in terms of Joseph's book, but it's a big book, you know?
Yeah.
At a time when we don't necessarily have like an awful lot of attention span, people think.
Yeah.
So how wonderful, you know, that that a range of depth, in-depth approaches can really be offered in a fashion that, in so many different fashions, you know, some very, as you say, the one sentence pith instruction, and then the really larger, longer kind of offerings.
Yeah, I think what's important to me is to let each thing be what it is and to try to listen to it, if you will. Like, what does this project want? What does it want to be? Does it want to be a small little this, or does it want to be a long that? And kind of let it be a being that finds its right form versus taking some Procrustean, like everything that we do fits this format. Well, that's just not the way creative projects are.
That's really wonderful. And I want to say that you're having worked with you on several projects and seen you with work with, say, Joseph or Ram Dass, or, you know, the creation of these products, the book or the recording, means so much to the creator. You know, this is representative of one's life's work. And I've always felt like you've honored that, and that it wasn't just a sense of what's most commercially appealing. And then there's, you know, I keep thinking of Joseph and the artwork and how glorious you were. Because Joseph, for anybody who's listening who doesn't know him, is extremely precise in terms of what he likes and doesn't like in terms of art. And I remember, I guess we were, you and I were having breakfast together in New York or something when the company was in the middle of that. And you said something like, and then I proposed to the art department, like, think of it as like a wonderful challenge, you know, like to really produce something that will make them happy.
I think the challenge for me has been more working with my internal staff. And they're like, Tammy, you don't stand up to the authors enough. We want to do it our way. Our way is that, you know, we make them fit into this and we only get three possible. So they have to choose one of three things and that'll be more profitable. And it'll also make our work easier. And, you know, it's not that I don't understand those arguments and it's not that I don't understand those perspectives, but I really think that, you know, we've defined ourselves now as an author-centric publishing company. And I think using that language is important. And I always try to tell people, put yourself in the place of the person who spent their entire life working on this body of work. And imagine someone puts a cover on it that you don't like, and you have to hold it up when you go and talk at a bookstore event or something. How would you feel? And yeah, so I think that, you know, people often, they just want to make their work more convenient for them. I mean, that's what people are trying to optimize their own flow and work life. But I think that could be a false optimization and that there are bigger goals to be achieved. But it takes a lot of creativity and fluidity and collaboration.
Yeah. So that brings me to the Inner MBA program and this new kind of program that you're offering, and the questions of leadership and leading a company or being in a leadership position in some way. And I'm wondering if you could begin the conversation about the MBA program.
Sure. Well, you know, about 10 years ago, I started seeing that people were starting to tiptoe into the world of mindfulness at work. Interesting. people are bringing meditation into the workplace, there could be a real opportunity here for Sounds True to be able to impact so many people and change the workplace. But at the time, and you know, this is interesting, Sharon, because it tracks to what we were saying about the 36-year history in my case and the 40-plus-year history in your case with IMS about how even the word mindfulness was accepted in the workplace, but meditation, not so much. Not so much. That sounds spiritual or religious. And I felt very nervous 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 6 years ago about trying to somehow scrub the spiritual dimension or mystical dimension or deep inner dimension out of the transformation of the workplace and just be a science-based, evidence-based mindfulness training program. I just thought that's not who I am. That's not what the Sounds True brand is. And it won't take people long if they're working in an HR department and they start researching what Sounds True is up to find like Wiccan blessings or something like that on our list. It's not going to take them long. And so it wasn't ready. The world, it didn't feel ready. It felt like the ground was becoming fertile, but not yet ready for Sounds True to enter. But then over the last few years, I was like, huh, there's a new opening in our time. And this whole wisdom and inner dimension. And you know, here you are with your books in the same space, reaching successfully a wide audience of people. It's time for loving kindness at work. It's time for Tonglen practice at work and self-compassion at work. It's time for a deep look, not just at how we can be purpose-driven in our work, but where will the real meaning from our work come from? So as I started seeing this ripening, I was in contact with someone who's a mutual friend of ours, Soren Gordimer of Wisdom 2.0. And Soren and I decided to partner. And he said, you know, I think I can bring LinkedIn to the table, Tammy. They're really interested in building a future at work that's based on compassion. They want to build compassionate companies and they want to train business leaders to put compassion at the center of their workplace policies. And so I think LinkedIn would be a great partner as well. And so that was really the beginning roots of the Inner MBA, this 9-month program that begins again in September of this year and then runs through May of 2022.
I remember when I wrote this book called Real Happiness at Work, which I don't know, maybe it came out like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that. And people were so funny about it often, like, well, partly that's the word happiness and how it's understood. But, you know, people were commenting like, you're not supposed to have fun all day long at work. That's why we call it work. We don't call it play. And I think, well, that's not really what I mean. You know, like, I don't think of happiness as just having fun all day long. And it does have so much more to do with that sense of meaning. And interestingly enough, as I was touring with that book, as one used to, and meeting different people, I'd meet so many people who had, like, on the face of it, not great jobs. And they were tremendously meaningful to them because they were using things like, how do I relate to customers? Can I make someone's day brighter? Can I bring more compassion into this workplace, as, you know, difficult as it is, or whatever? And they felt genuinely a sense of connection and importance in what they were doing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think, you know, another big motivator for me in creating the Inner MBA is that I started hearing more and more people leading businesses who were saying things like, you know, we're part of the conscious capitalist movement, or our company's becoming a B Corp, and all terrific aspirations and turning businesses into these forces for good, but yet not doing the actual inner work such that the way the companies were being managed there was actually a deep empowerment of everybody in the workplace. So not just about policies at a certain level or even business philanthropy, but something else, something that says, you know, we've actually turned our business into, and this is my language, a crucible for personal growth. Mm-hmm. We value people growing at work. And there are skills that are required if you're going to have your business be a crucible for personal growth. Meaning, do people know how to listen deeply, really, and give feedback and have brave conversations, really, and be direct with each other in a way that's kind and skillful versus having all these weird back channeling conversations and gossiping and creating office drama. And this is where I thought, you know, I really want the workplace to be our contemporary growth crucible. And it's wonderful to have mindfulness practice be part of work. And it's so helpful. And then do people have the skills to take their mindfulness off the cushion and under situations of stress, which there are all the time, use those skills, those mindfulness skills interpersonally. And that's really a lot of what inspired me about the Inner MBA, was to provide people with that training and also give people some practice environments where we can start trying on those skills of coming forward and having difficult conversations, listening in a deeper and different way, talking to each other about our business challenges, that kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting because I remember, you know, as I did more and more work with the people we call caregivers, you know, who were often, in many cases, on the front lines of suffering, trying to make a difference, international humanitarian aid workers and domestic violence shelter workers, which is where it started. And these days, frontline medical personnel. Many times, you know, when some program was announced, people would write and say, I don't know if I qualify. I'm a manager.
Right.
You know, I sit in an office. I'm not in the Syrian refugee camps, actually. But they were struggling, you know, so much often because they were dispensing resources. They were responsible for a lot of decisions. They were allocating personnel and sometimes having to let go of personnel. And there was so much burnout on that level. And they didn't think of themselves as caregivers because they were one step removed. And of course, we always said, absolutely, you know, please come. And so I'm wondering, like, just sort of what's the range of who this program is geared towards?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll answer that in just a moment, but I want to connect one thing, because you talked about how when you put out happiness at work, people were really like, happiness? And yet this whole notion of well-being and self-care, it's now absolutely clear that when people feel that the place they work for cares about them and gives them a green light to engage in their own self-care and to focus on well-being, that the level of engagement obviously goes up. Because, you know, really, what kind of creativity, productivity, and engagement are you going to get from a burned out staff? You know, people are riding on fumes. And so I think that's a big part of the revolution that we're seeing, is people wanting to be whole people at work, not one productivity machine in the grind when they go into work, and then separately somebody who tries to restore themselves, but one integrated, balanced person who has a whole lot of well-being and works for a company that cares about that. So in terms of the type of people that are drawn to the Inner MBA, I think they're people who sense that they could up-level their own skills as a manager, as a leader, as a solopreneur, entrepreneur, as a coach. A lot of people are now exploring new careers as mindfulness coaches or trainers. wanting to add on new skills if they're someone who goes into business as a coach. And then companies are sending groups of their employees. Google sent 100 employees, LinkedIn, a couple hundred employees, the Veterans Health Administration. And really, it's because what we've packed into the 9 months of the program is the best wisdom training. As you mentioned, Sharon, you're in the program. And other wisdom teachers as well, but also CEOs. And CEOs like Rose Macario of Patagonia or Eileen Fisher, Joey Bergstein from Seventh Generation, who are saying, look, it's not a myth that when you put these kinds of workplace policies in place that you get better results. Let me tell you how we did it in our workplace, the challenges we faced, and the outcomes. Let me share this all with you. And so it's a real learning incubator for what I think are the pioneers, the people who are pioneering a new way of doing business that, quite honestly, we need to have if we're going to have a healthy collective future where business is seen as a healing agent in society, not a destructive agent. We need to do this. And it's possible for business to be a very powerful force that both solves problems for customers, for people, and creates environments where we grow at work and we bring out the best in human nature.
I bet a lot of people listen to this and they think it doesn't sound like my workplace.
It might not today, but let's see where we are in 10, 20 years, because I think there are several factors that are pushing this evolutionary path. So I think we're just at the beginning. Definitely we're in just the foothills of this. But I think when you look at the B Corp movement, for example, it takes a lot to qualify as a B Corp. You have to have a lot of transformation within your company. And as more and more of us start saying, I'm going to shop with B Corps, I'm going to support B Corps. And as more and more customers say, okay, they're not a B Corp, but I love that company. I read an article about them. I love the way that they have a buy one, give one policy. That company has not just a trademark, but what's called a love mark. They have a love mark that I identify with that brand. I want to support that brand. And when we start not supporting the companies that don't score well, that don't have good employee reports, we're going to see them starting to change. Also, we live in a time of such transparency where you can't hide things anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't hide what's happening in your workplace. So in that sense, there's a maturation going on in that what's happening behind closed doors, you think they're closed doors at a company. The doors aren't really closed. So businesses are getting sniffed out. And that transparency, that's part of what's driving the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement. I think it will also drive an economic justice movement and a well-being movement at work. And we're going to see it. It's coming.
I mean, I agree. It's really just at the very beginning. I wonder if you need to define B Corp for people.
Sure. A B Corp is a type of certification, kind of like the way a company might be certified as a fair trade coffee company. Fair trade's a certification, and it's a certification that any company can get if you're willing to have policies and metrics at your company that support diversity, equity, inclusion, justice, a fair minimum wage, HR policies that are inclusive, that kind of thing. Sounds True is in the process this year of becoming a B Corp, and it's forcing us to do a lot of work to formalize some of the wonderful policies that we hadn't formally written up. And I think it's, once again, it's showing a wave in the culture that I think is going to keep growing. I hope it's going to keep growing. I feel that it is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that it is too. And I also feel like it's right at the beginning as people wrestle with all of these issues, like who's in a leadership position? Have people been shut out because of gender or sexual preference or race? Or and even what leadership looks like, I think, is being redefined. And I do think it's really right at the beginning, and it reflects sort of the nature of change in society. I went to some conference once, and there was a whole presentation on how the nation state was the entity that drove change for a long time because it was the most powerful, and maybe that was becoming business. You know, that there's just different ways of seeing society and what makes for change, and business has been exempt in the sort of singular devotion to profit. Mm-hmm. And as that broadens and changes, we may see it playing more of a role than many other entities, which would be great because we spend a lot of time at work.
Yeah. And I think people who find themselves at businesses and go, what? This doesn't look anything like my workplace. You know, obviously there's the choice, if it is a choice for you, and if there are options for you to work somewhere else that does reflect your values. But even if you have to stay where you are, and this is a question that came up at the Inner MBA, someone asked this to Padmasree Warrior, who is a powerful technology leader. And she talked about how when in her work with various technology companies, even when there are certain policies that she didn't agree with, what she committed herself to doing was influencing what was in her sphere to influence, doing what she could do in the ways that she could to make an impact. And there are people who are saying, you know, I can start a voluntary meditation group right at work. That's just something I do on the side. I can do that. And so there are different things that people can do, different ways you can have influence where you work, or, as I said, choose not to work there. I think one of the forces that's also driving this movement of wisdom at work is people making choices, really talented people making choices about where they'll work. Oh, so in order to get the best talent, guess what? You have to be a different kind of company.
So this is a 9-month program, and I don't know how much this was part of your conscious intention in the beginning, but it seems like in 9 months, there's a much greater sense of community that's created from people doing the program, and that they then can be a support for one another as people are facing different challenges and trying to manifest these things in their lives.
Yeah, well, definitely the idea was to have something that would be long enough that it could create real transformation. And of course, as I mentioned, I was trying to pack 3 decades mm-hmm. of learning and work with different wisdom teachers and conscious business trainers into, you know, and they were like, Tammy, it's going to take at least 9 months. And let's do that. Then someone commented after we launched the program, it takes 9 months to have a baby.
Yeah, that's right. And I was just thinking that.
We didn't even realize, but we divided the program into 3 trimesters. Yeah. And we weren't even really thinking about, oh, we're birthing our new selves. We weren't really thinking that way when we designed it, but it turned out that way, with the first trimester focusing on personal awareness, personal development, the second trimester on interpersonal skills, and then the third transforming our actual organization and the greater world. But we didn't think about that, but it is. It's 9 months to birth a new you. And it's not even so much the acquisition of skills, although that's a part of it, but it's about becoming someone who is different and sees the world differently, so that you're actually starting to look through a lens of interdependence. And, you know, Sharon, I don't know if you'll remember this. This is a conversation you and I had. It might have been 2 decades ago.
It could have been.
At least more than a decade ago. So you may not remember it, but we were talking about business of all things. And you said, isn't it crazy how companies go out and they try to absolutely make as much money as possible, even if it means, you know, walking over people or whatever. I don't think you use those words, but, you know, that wringing out as much profit as they can, ringing the, and then they have these departments where they give money away. What about the idea that you could work differently within a kind of justice model from the very beginning. So I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that.
But you mentioned
something. How did I know that 2 decades ago?
You knew that. I don't know. And it just stuck with me. And I think it's this idea of like how we do everything is what matters, not hitting some goal like a profit goal and then donating our money, but instead making each step of our organizational life a beautiful and gorgeous and just step, each step of the way. And to me, that's much more what it means to have a dharmic business, which is, of course, always what I wanted, a business that the great mystics and wisdom teachers that we publish now and the lineages that I feel we are in service to that are hundreds and thousands of years old, that they would be proud of. They would look at that organization and go, how beautiful. I mean, that's always what I've wanted.
That's so wonderful. And thank you so much for everything that you do and for coming on this podcast. So lastly, I would love it if you could lead us in a guided practice to close out our conversation.
Sure. Well, you know, I studied somatic meditation for about 15 years. And this will be a body-based somatic meditation. And we can just begin by, as we breathe in, feel our sits bones and feel them getting heavy, heavy as we breathe in. And then as we exhale, dropping in a sense of deep release. And then with the next inhale, you can imagine that there's an invisible string pulling you up where the sutras come together at the top of your head. So there's a natural elongation that's happening in the spine as we do this. So breathing in, imagine that string pulling up the hairs, the back of your head. And then when we exhale, we just let ourselves be heavy sitting here. So it's this combination of dropping and releasing on the exhale, and on the inhale, letting a natural elongation happen in the spine as if we're being tugged up by an invisible string. So one more breath like that, elongating our spine on the inhale. And letting ourselves be heavy in our sits bones on the exhale. And then for this practice, what we're going to do is breathe up from below us, actually starting to breathe in from a point at the center of the earth. So just imagine a point at the center of the earth, just use your imagination, and breathe in a stream of fresh life force energy from all the way down in the center of the earth, and bring it up like an upflowing river, coming in through an open gate at the perineum and then flowing up in front of your spine. All the way up to that point at the top of your head and then coming out through the top of your head like a little fountain. We're becoming like a human fountain that's being sourced from this deep, deep, deep river of fresh life force, starting with the inhale down at the center of the earth. So let's take some breaths like that, breathing in. Just use your imagination to help you. The energy just naturally comes up and into your body. Let it flow in front of your spine all the way up. Back of the neck and head, all the way out the top of the head. And the exhale is a relaxation, and then we breathe in again from that point at the center of the earth. And let your inhale gradually get longer and deeper so you can relish this stream of energy more and more coming up into your body. So it's a nice, long, beautiful inhale. And then it's a deep, relaxing, letting go, exhale. Releasing everything. Again, really enjoying as much as you can the experience of the inhale. Let yourself love it. And then letting go as much as possible on the exhale. And then this time when you breathe in, nice, beautiful, long inhale, and then you breathe out. At the very end of the exhale, you can just take a moment and explore the open space that's there at the end of the exhale before you breathe in again. Just take a couple beats and explore that. And we'll just bring this to a close. You can open your eyes. And Sharon, I can thank you because I always love being with you. You're so super intelligent and loving, and it warms my heart. Thank you so much.
I always love being with you. So thank you for joining us, and really for everything you're doing. So it's quite amazing. And 36 years goes by like the blink of an eye. So. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, so long in coming. So to learn more about Tammy's work, you can check out her podcast, Insights at the Edge, wherever you get your podcasts. And to learn more about the Inner MBA program, you can visit innermba.soundstrue.com. It's innermba.soundstrue.com. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Metta Hour podcast from the Be Here Now Network. May you be safe, be happy, be healthy, and live with ease.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. To learn more about Sharon and her ongoing teaching schedule, as well as online courses and a free guided meditation, check out her website at sharonsalzberg.com.